Hi everyone, this is Dr. Cheryl Selman and welcome to The Love Code. This is a wonderful show because it is an opportunity to really be inspired to have conversations with people who are on the spiritual path, many different paths, all leading to the same place. And it's an opportunity to open your hearts, to connect with your soul, to let more healing into your life, and really remembering who you are and why you are here. And as always, it's just a pleasure to have you with me on the show today because I have another wonderful guest that I know will inspire all of you who are listening. If you are listening for the very first time, I want to welcome you. I want to invite you to go to my website, which is Dr. Cheryl Selman. That's drcherylselman.com. If you opt in there, I send all of the shows out to you every week, or you can go over to my Facebook page, which is What Women Must Know. And What Women Must Know is the show, the name of the show of the other program that I have on Progressive Radio Network every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. So you'll get two fantastic shows sent to you every week, and I know you'll really enjoy them. Okay. So let's talk about my guest today. We're going to be exploring and learning about the life of a peace troubadour with James Twyman. And James, also known as the Peace Troubadour, is the New York Times bestselling author of 16 books, including The Moses Code and The Barn Dance. His first book, Emissary of Light, released in 1996, chronicled his journeys into Bosnia and Croatia during the war to meet a group of mystics living in the Balkan Mountains with a message of peace for the world. His latest book is Giovanni and the Camino of St. Francis, and James has recorded more than 18 music albums, including the Billboard chart I Am Wishes Fulfilled with Dr. Wayne Dyer. He has also written and produced or directed 7 feature films, including the award-winning Redwood Highway, starring Shirley Knight and Tom Skerritt, and Indigo, starring Neil Donald Walsh. And James Twyman's ministry as the Peace Troubadour inspired him to initiate dozens of synchronized global meditations with millions of people focusing on their energy and prayers on wars and conflicts around the world. He has also been invited to such countries as Bosnia, Northern Ireland, South Africa, and Israel. In Northern Ireland, James performed for the leaders of the two political parties in Belfast during peace negotiations in 1998. And in 2018, James was consecrated a Franciscan hermit and now lives in Mexico, where he founded Namaste Lake Chapala, an interfaith peace community. And the community has nearly 40 full-time residents with more than 36 houses or apartments. So, I need to take a breath.
I know. When I hear all that, I think you're talking about someone else, not me.
I know. You know, it's like when we hear what we've accomplished, we just move forward in life, and we really haven't fully appreciated all the time.
Exactly.
All the things we have created and accomplished. So it's a pleasure to have you on the show, James. I have known about you for many years. I have followed many of the things and programs you have done. So it's such a pleasure to actually meet you in the flesh, so to speak, to have this conversation with you. You're such an inspirational person. You've been doing so many things. You have your fingers in so many different pies with books and music and movies. It's really, inspirational and quite overwhelming how you do all that. I'd like to know and get some of your secret sauce there. But I thought we'd start our conversation today with you sharing a bit about yourself and your personal journey that led you to this path that really is a very spiritual path, and using all the creative arts to really open people's hearts.
Well, yes. I'll begin by starting at the beginning, which is also kind of the end, which is that I was always very inspired by the life of St. Francis of Assisi. From the time I was very young, and that's the kind of thing that never really leaves it. it gets into your blood. And when I was very young, like 18, I became a Franciscan and stayed in that community for only for a couple of years. But and now here I am sort of coming back to that. And I'm going to be launching a big tour next year where I'm traveling across the U.S. from Oregon all the way to New York, where I'll be performing a musical, a one-man musical based on the life of St. Francis that I wrote. That will be on Broadway for 2 weeks in February and March of next year. And as I travel across the country, I'll be traveling penniless in imitation of St. Francis. So with no money, not even having any idea how I'm getting from place to place, just in complete trust, and just trying to imitate Francis. So it started off when I was very young in that way, and all of these adventures like the Peace Troubadour and other things were inspired by that. I remember when I first had that inspiration to be what they called the Peace Troubadour, it was because a friend of mine had given me a sheet of paper back in 1994 that had the peace prayers from the 12 major religions of the world on them. And they were prayers that had been prayed in Assisi, the home of St. Francis, back in 1986 when Pope John Paul II called all the leaders of the different religions of the world together, not to discuss or argue, but to simply pray together and to each pray the peace prayer that came from their tradition. So I was given those prayers, and in 1 hour, I put all of them to music. It was like a miracle. And the music was beautiful, and I decided that I wanted to share those prayers for the rest of my life and be like St. Francis, a penniless troubadour, just dedicated to peace. And in 1995 is when I started doing that. And all of these adventures that I've had since then began there and took me in many different directions with the many books and movies and the music. And here I am kind of back at that beginning point, or that end point, I guess, where I'm going to be launching this tour next year, as I mentioned, traveling across the country to do the musical on Broadway. So that seems to be the thread. You know, that St. Francis connection was always the thread from the very beginning that brought me to this moment.
Well, there's so many questions I have. So let me just start with asking you to share more about St. Francis. Who was this man? Why mm-hmm. is he, for you, such a strong energy in your life? Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, he's that energy, that being, has had a huge impact in choices you've made in your life and what you're doing. So who was St. Francis?
Well, he's the most beloved of all the Catholic saints. He is someone who has been admired by people for 800 years. And you could easily say that he changed the world 800 years ago because he wanted to do one very simple thing. He wanted to see if it was possible to do what Jesus said, not just talk about it or just think you're supposed to follow some rules, but to really live it. And he was a very rich kid in Assisi. He was the son of a cloth merchant, but he gave up everything because he was on fire and he wanted to share that fire. And it was the very end of what we now call the Dark Ages. And yet the inspiration that Francis brought, it changed Europe and led, you could say easily, to the Renaissance. All of the Renaissance painters and the different people that changed the world were inspired by Francis. So he was really the initiation point. And you could also say that Francis, first of all, so many people associate him with what I call the bird bath saint, you know, the lover of animals. And we see statues of him in all the gardens almost everywhere you look, but he's so much more than that. He's so much more complicated and, I think, important than that, to the point that there was a quote. Actually, when I read this quote, it was one of the things that inspired me to write this musical. It was someone who, in the 20th century, said, the quote is basically, "Our revolution failed. It created more atrocities than it did good. What we really needed were 10 St. Francis of Assisi's." The person who said that was Vladimir Lenin, an atheist who initiated the Russian Revolution. He recognized 800 years, or I guess at that point, 700 years later, that's what changes the world, someone like Francis. And if there had been 10 people like that in Russia at that time, they wouldn't have needed a revolution. And I think that is very meaningful today as well, because we look out at the world and we see more division than I think any of us have ever seen in our lives. And we wonder what we could do or what could be done to shift it. And the answer, I think, Lenin, he expressed beautifully, that what we need are 10 people like St. Francis who are completely 100% dedicated to living this, not just talking about it, but really living it. And that if we could do that, the world would change on its own. So, I mean, I could talk about the stories of Francis all day long, but it really comes down to a very, very simple inspiration. You want to see if it was possible to do this for real.
So he, just staying a little bit more with St. Francis, so he came from wealth, and I've been reading your book, Giovanni and the Camino of St. Francis, which, by the way, is a really good read. So I just want you to
Thank
know
you.
It's really, it really
you.
Grabs you, it sucks you in. So I'm reading it. But in the beginning, you talk a little bit about him, at least the section that I got to, and he actually went to war. He was a crusader when he was
That's
a young
right.
man, I guess, and was captured, held hostage. And that was a pivotal experience on his path of his destiny. Can
yes.
you elaborate a bit more?
At that particular time, it was not the Crusades, but there is a city near Assisi called Perugia. And at that time, different cities, different towns were always doing battle against each other, because some towns or cities were aligned with the Pope and others were aligned with the Emperor, or some were independent. And so there was always battles back and forth of who would control whom. And so Assisi went to battle with neighboring Perugia. And this is the war in which Francis was captured. He was thrown into prison with all of the other nobility from Assisi for a year, and that changed him. That is what rocked his world and made him look at everything different. By the time he was ransomed and returned to Assisi, he was no longer attracted to all of the fast living and the wealth that he had really loved before, and he was looking for something deeper. So he went through several years of just floundering, until he had an experience in a little chapel called San Damiano, where in his experience, there was a cross there above the altar. The chapel was falling to ruin, but this cross came to life in front of him and said, "Francis, can't you see my church is falling to ruin? Rebuild my church." And so he took that literally, and he began to beg for stones rich Assisians to begin rebuilding that chapel. And it ultimately led to his father pulling him in front of the whole town, in front of the bishop of Assisi, and demanding that he be punished for basically squandering all his money on this chapel. And Francis did something that was very dramatic. He actually stripped naked. He took off all of his clothes in front of the whole town and laid them at his father's feet, and then walked out and began a new life, serving the poor and living the life of simplicity. So it began, as you said, in that prison where he was held for a year. And I think for all of us, there are times when our lives are shaken. There are things that happen to us where we suddenly question all the things that were once so important to us that no longer seem to have any value. And Francis definitely went through that. And what emerged from that experience was someone who changed the world, who 800 years later, we're talking about this little man who stripped naked in front of the whole town and simply tried to live a life of dedication and service.
That's such an inspiring story. It just reminds me of what we sometimes call the deep, the the night of the soul, the deep, going through
the dark night of the soul.
Dark night of the soul. That's it. Well, you know, that time when, for whatever reason, there is an event that goes on or a cycle in one's life where everything is torn away from you, is that you've been conditioned to believe to be true, and you're just faced with the cauldron of a new sense of a truer sense of who you are being born. But in that dark night of the soul, you really don't know who you are anymore, and that's part of why it's such a painful time, because everything, your ego is being stripped of all the beliefs that you've accumulated. And it just sounds like that was a process that he went through to get him to the place, as it does for all of us, because we all go through those times to really question who we are and to be put on a path that we didn't know really existed before. I can remember those times.
Well, we never go on to the path when we're comfortable. That's, I think, a universal truth. When you're comfortable and you think everything is going your way, there's no impetus to move you into a newer, higher, greatest point. And when everything starts to shake around you, as it did for Francis, and as it does for all of us at different times, that's when we are challenged, and that's where we have the opportunity to really live this and not just give it lip service.
Right. So I want to ask you a little bit more about St. Francis. So he started this order. He attracted other young nobility to it. He began to have his ministry. What happened to him later in life?
Well, as you said, Francis at first just left Assisi and began living this himself. The first thing he did was he went and lived among the lepers who were outside of Assisi, who he was so terrified of before, and suddenly they became the greatest gift to him. And he began to inspire people. And pretty soon, the other rich, noble youth of Assisi began to leave everything behind just as he had done. And also women. Of course, many of us have heard of St. Clare, who often is forgotten in this discussion, but Clare is just as vital to this story as Frances ever was. She was the first woman to leave everything. And she left a great deal because her family was the most noble in Assisi. She was from practically royalty. And she had to sneak out of her family's home and come and be consecrated. And so she founded the first order of nuns. And Francis formed the Order of Brothers. And but he still traveled all over the world, really, not only through Europe, but there's a great story that always inspired me that happened 800 years ago this year. And this is why Francis is always linked with peace, especially interfaith peace work, because at that time during the Crusades, the Muslim leader was the Sultan al-Kamil of Egypt. And the Sultan al-Kamil had once said that he would give a Byzantine gold coin to any Muslim who would bring him the head of a Christian. It was very serious. And when Francis heard this, he said, okay, I'm going there. I have to go talk to this guy. And of course, everyone told him he was crazy, that he'd be killed. And he didn't listen. He went because that's the kind of person he was. And of course, he was captured. He and a brother of his named Brother Leo were sentenced to die. And yet there they were in the prison, singing and dancing and just jumping for joy. And the Sultan decided to have sport with him and invited him to come and have a meeting. What was happening was the Sultan was so moved by the simple faith of this man that he not only let him live, but let he and Leo travel all throughout that whole area of Islam sharing the gospel. And that's why Francis is associated with interfaith peace work. So he traveled all over the world doing this work, and he actually died pretty young. I think he was 44 when he died. All of these travels and the way that he would punish himself, because Francis, you have to take in context. When people learn more about him, they're less attracted to him because they think, well, I can't relate to the way that he would punish himself, for example. But when you realize that he didn't live in the 20th century, he lived in the 12th century, and or the 13th century, rather. And so when you look at him from that context and understand that level of spirituality, he's easier to digest, though it did cut his life short. But he inspired so many people, and to this day, the Franciscan Order is still one of the most beautiful orders in the whole world.
Wow, you know, that's such an amazing story to learn of someone who had such strong faith. Such strong faith. He would like walk into the den of the lion, so to speak, right?
Yes.
Right? Into that Muslim land and just trust the process, trust that, you know, that he will fulfill the mission he went to do there. That takes a lot of strength. And yeah, how inspiring, right? That he just allowed the fate to unfold, his destiny to unfold.
That's what changes the world, doesn't it? And I think that's what Vladimir Lenin recognized. Someone who is on fire is compelling. Mm. We are compelled by people who are on fire with love. And that was certainly Francis. And traveling, as I will be next year, in Spain for 2 months, penniless and just in complete trust, I'm just hoping that that same fire will take over. And who knows what that's going to be like? I'm curious, because the entire time I'm going to be on this, my goal is to actually think as Francis would that whole 2 months. Think of it this way. If you take a method actor like Daniel Day-Lewis, when Daniel Day-Lewis, for example, played Lincoln in Spielberg's film, for that whole 7 months, he was Abraham Lincoln. He never left character. And I'll be doing something very similar to that when I'm on this tour, but just thinking and being as St. Francis, not only when I'm on stage, but when I'm traveling around, getting rides, whatever it may be. And by the time we get to New York, it's going to be very interesting to see what has shifted in my life. Because Francis's magic was that he was simply trying to imitate Jesus. So in a way, I'll be imitating the imitator, and it's going to be very curious to see how that changes things.
It'll be very interesting if you just live that presence, that energy, that, you know, with that intention. It'll be very interesting. So are you traveling from Portland to New York? Is that what you're going to be doing?
Exactly. I'll be starting in Portland on January 4th, and then down to Santa Barbara. Then I'll be going over to Phoenix, Sedona, Santa Fe, Kansas City, St. Louis, Chicago, Cleveland, Boston area, Philadelphia, and then New York. And people can, if they want, they can check out the schedule. In fact, if they want, they can even see the first 20 minutes of the musical. If you go to stfrancismusical.com, and saint is just S-T, musical.com. stfrancismusical.com. And I just finished performing it three different times in Assisi in Italy, and it was professionally shot so we could give people a bit of a taste of it. So if they want to actually go watch the first 20 minutes, they can see it right there on stfrancismusical.com.
Are you doing this by yourself, or do you have other people who will be accompanying you?
There'll be one other person, a dear friend of mine named Bill Free, will be traveling with me, and he's completely into it. And I decided that it was best to have someone come with me, because Francis always believed in traveling two by two. So I thought to have someone who was dedicated to this just as much as I was would be very important.
So you're going to be setting off, traveling all over the United States with no transport, no money. No accommodations organized, and just taking each day, seeing what happens. How you go?
That's right. And
wow.
There are a few rules. Number one, I cannot fly anywhere. If someone wants to buy us a bus ticket, they can. We cannot take any money for anything. And, you know, years ago, there was a woman who called herself Peace Pilgrim, who
That's right.
people can look. Yeah, she was so inspiring. She spent her retirement, I think, over 20 years walking back and forth across the country. And she would say that I walk until given shelter and I fast until given food. And yes, I don't think she ever went without a place to sleep and probably never missed a meal because, once again, she was on fire and people are compelled by that. And so I think she's another big inspiration for me. She was a kind of modern day Saint Francis. And when someone comes along like that, it really inspires and takes over. And so once again, I'm excited because number one, for me, this is going to be a deep internal journey, and it will be a challenge to other people as well, I think, because we do live in a time when people are starting to realize that this consumer culture is never going to give us what we want. It's never going to give us what it promises. And so more and more people are turning toward a minimal lifestyle, a more simple lifestyle. And certainly Francis is an example of that. And if we have modern day people who can take that example and apply it to now, just imagine the impact that could have on millions of people.
Well, I'm sure it will be an inspiration. Are you giving people your route so they find
you? Oh, yeah, I just did.
Yeah. But like more specific. Sure you're not coming through Tulsa, Oklahoma?
Oh, I wish I was. I've done a few things in Tulsa, and I haven't been there in years. But unless Tulsa is between – I don't think you're between – Santa Fe and Kansas City, but
oh yes,
we
are. It's Route 66. You bet. All right, I'll have to keep an eye out for you.
You'll have to see. Yeah, but people can see the schedule. They can also go to my website, which is jimmytwyman.com, and that'll take you there. But the schedule is right there on the website. If they go to stfrancismusical.com and it'll have all of the information of where I'm sharing the musical and the way to Broadway.
So let me ask you, the next question I have is how did you get to be on Broadway? How did that happen?
Oh, goodness. It's easier and harder than you could imagine. First of all, you have to have a show that people will hopefully come out to see. And then it's just a matter of having a theater that is willing to wanting to have you perform there for a couple of weeks. And then, of course, you need to fill the seats. And we're going to be doing a lot of interviews like this and just trying to capture something that excites people. And I don't know how it's going to turn out. I hope people show up, but hopefully when people hear interviews like this, they're going to be inspired and will want to come. There are a lot of people that I know who are going to be coming to New York just to come and be part of that, because we're doing something that I don't think any Broadway show has ever done. Two things. Number one, we're going to be every day on the street passing out free tickets to the homeless. So we're going to be inviting people off the street to come in to join us as our guest every night. And then we're also going to have a soup kitchen, which we share before the performance. So everyone, whether they bought a ticket or come as our guest, will be able to enjoy a bowl of soup together. So we're going to try and once again live this as close to how Francis would have shared it as possible. And hopefully some spark is going to catch, and it's going to get some attention, and we'll see what happens from there.
Well, I'm sure you will get attention. That's such an inspiring, event to create. I mean, you probably have people. I mean, you've been in the movie industry, you've been in the music industry, so I would imagine you've got great contacts who also can help support making this all happen.
We're certainly hoping so.
Wow, yeah.
But it's a big leap of trust, as you can imagine.
Well, it seems like everything about your life is a big leap of trust, which has always borne fruit. You know, you're still here. You know,
you're still here,
and you know, and you're living this spiritual and creative life, bringing together your gifts, your talents, for a greater spiritual purpose, which is always inspirational to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel very blessed and always have, you know, to be able to travel around the world telling people how holy they are. I can't imagine a better career than that.
So tell us about your new book, Giovanni and the Camino of St. Francis. What inspired you to write that?
Well, many people have heard about the Camino de Santiago in Spain. Many people have walked that. And they don't necessarily know that there are other Caminos, including the Camino of St. Francis, which goes through Italy. And this follows some of the small paths and roads that Francis would have walked 800 years ago, going from place to place. It begins in a place called Laverna, a monastery in the Tuscan Mountains, and then goes to Assisi. It's about 110 miles. And I've walked it now 4 times. I just finished walking it a couple of weeks ago, actually. And the first time, you know, you have a lot of time to think when you're walking a Camino. And when my mind is open like that, I start to think about stories. And so I began to imagine the story of a woman who is older, who has had a tough life, and she is compelled to come and walk the Camino and ends up meeting this young Italian guy named Giovanni, who very slowly helps her to open her heart again and has many adventures. And it was also a new, very modern way of telling some of the stories of St. Francis. So as I walked that first time, I just imagined what would happen to this woman and what sort of things would she learn. And I had actually decided that I wasn't going to write any more books unless I had to. In other words, unless there was something that was just eating away at me that wouldn't let me go, and this story wouldn't let me go, I had to write this. And finally, about maybe a year, year and a half ago, I sat down and began, and it just sort of wrote itself. And it's a beautiful story, and I think people are going to enjoy it. It's a great introduction to St. Francis, but it's also more than that, because it is a heartfelt story about a woman's journey who realizes that you're never too old to have a great adventure and you're never too old to heal your life.
Yeah, which is such an important message for all of us to get.
Yes.
And to be open, to explore, to be curious, to grow, and to heal at any age.
Exactly.
Of course, possible. And how beautiful. Well, it's just really well written, James. And
thank
you. Know, I've been enjoying it. You know, it's like, you know, a book is well written when you suddenly start reading it and you dive into it, you know, and then you're in that world. And that's
right.
How I feel reading that book. You know, it just brings me to that world. And it's like, oh, my God, now I want to go to the Camino of St. Francis. You know,
yeah.
I've got to add that to
one
my
of the highest
list now.
You should, and I'm going to be doing, I just got off the phone a little while ago with my organizer. We're going to be doing another group Camino next year at the end of May and into June. I do this at least once a year now, because so many people do want to walk it, but now we're doing what we call the Camino Light, because about a year and a half ago, I walked it, the whole thing again, and basically decided I don't want to do this anymore. But it's pretty hard. But the lighter version is much more manageable, gives us more time to enjoy Italy and enjoy the little villages that Francis would have enjoyed. So if people go to jimmytwyman.com, they can always get on my email list, and we're going to be announcing this new trip, so maybe you should come and join us and walk
maybe
the same path.
One of the pilgrimages that I'm doing next year that I've been called to do or inspired to do is to go to Bhutan. Have a pilgrimage, bringing a small group of people with me who are also inspired to experience what it's like to be in that country, which is such a spiritual country.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, Bhutan is the only country that's right now a pure Buddhist country, trying to live those values in every aspect of their life, and these thousand-year-old temples that are there on the sides of mountains and things. So, yes, I think pilgrimages are so important. You know, it just is
absolutely
an opportunity to get out of your normal life and to open to more possibilities of who you are.
And they remind us that we're all pilgrims in this world, that none of us are really at home here, and there is a deeper experience that we're all longing for. And if you treat life in that way, if you realize that you are a pilgrim, it changes it, and it gives a spiritual dimension to our daily lives, where we're never satisfied with just ordinary pursuits. We're always striving to awaken and to remember and to share. And that certainly was a very Franciscan ideal, but I think it's a very human ideal as well, because it is what we're all longing for. There is that sense of desire for the infinite that the world is never going to give us. And if we realize we're pilgrims here, and that there is an actual goal, which you could call oneness, awakening, whatever, it changes the way that we live our lives on a day-to-day basis.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm one that I do love travel. I do love experiencing different cultures. I do love having different, you know, just a different experiences in life, because I think every time we do that, we learn more about ourselves, and we connect more with others and with this world and the spiritual connection as well. So I can really relate to that. So you have recently become consecrated as a Franciscan hermit. What does that mean, to be a Franciscan hermit?
Good question. I'm trying to figure that out myself. I sometimes feel like St. Francis, who really wanted just to stay up in his cave on Mount Subasio and let everything else go and just devote himself to contemplation. And yet he was always pulled back into the world. And I think that's how my life has been. There definitely is something in me that is drawn to contemplation and the hermit lifestyle. But then I get inspired by things like these books and musicals and find myself out sharing. But I was actually ordained as what's called an old Catholic priest. And the old Catholic Church is a branch of the Catholic Church that split off back in the 1800s. And so the difference is that basically I'm a Catholic priest, but independent, so I can do a lot more than I would be able to otherwise. And so I took private vows as a Franciscan hermit with a bishop, which it's like being a free agent, really. I can live this life, but I can do it in however I'm guided to do it, to live it. And it gives me a lot of flexibility, but it also seems to scratch an itch that I've had for a long time that lets me feel like I'm living the consecrated life that I've always wanted to live.
So you get to be a Franciscan monk in the manner that you want to be one. It sounds like.
Yeah.
You know, you started off in the monastery when you were young and come full circle, but now you get to do it with all of the freedom to express your creative expressions around the world.
You know, not long ago, I was contacted by a priest who was a dear friend of mine when I entered the order when I was only 18. He entered the same day I did, and he stayed, and now he's been serving all over the world for a long time. And he read the book Giovanni and contacted me, and we were talking, and I just said, I wonder what my life would have been like if I had stayed. And he said, you never would have made it. I said, why do you say that? He said, even when you were young, you were independent, and when you're in an order like that, you're kind of put through a cookie cutter, and you're expected to just do what you're told and to follow the guidelines and to be formed into this. And that probably never would have worked for me. I think I really was always a free agent and very independent and creative. So this worked out quite well, where I can live this, but in my own way, and give everything to it, but in a way that allows me to express myself creatively.
Yeah. I think you've organized it extremely well.
Well, thank you.
So another question I have is the community that you founded in Mexico, Namaste Lake Chapala. Can you share more about what goes on there and how you created it and what its purpose is?
Well, I live outside Guadalajara. There's an area called Lake Chapala, which is the biggest lake in Mexico, huge lake. And there's several towns along the shore of the lake that are a really big destination for North Americans. So it's actually the biggest expat area in the whole world for Americans and Canadians. And so there are probably 10,000 people who live there who are from North America. And we're going to go and just wanted to live outside the U.S. for a while and ended up finding this big property and just opened it up. And within really days, it was full of people who wanted to live together and share and go deeper. And then we ended up buying another property and then another property, all of them right next to each other, and started building these small casitas and apartments. And by the end of the year, we'll have almost 40 houses or apartments on the property. And there's always a waiting list for people to come in and join us because, once again, it goes back to what we were saying before, that there is a kind of fire that's going on there, and that's what happens when people are dedicated and people are just focused, and yet at the same time simple and happy and loving and all of those things. And I'm just so thrilled that there are so many people who are showing up there who want to just be together and join. And we get together every morning at 9:30 and have a session where we sing and pray and meditate. And then during the day, people just do whatever they want to do, and we have our meals together, and it's a very vibrant, beautiful community.
You know, it seems to me that you have this magic about you, that you can set an intention and make things happen. You know, to decide you want to create a community and buy a property and have people show up and have it working harmoniously and expand, that's quite remarkable, to be totally honest, I would think. You know, a lot of these visions and these idealistic goals don't always go so smoothly.
That's very true.
With your music and doing the movies and creating, you know, best-selling movies and albums, and you live this incredible life where you are able to manifest wonderful things all the time.
Yeah. Well, I'm very fortunate. And I think the reason it's working is because I do my best to stay out of the way and not interfere and just to let things unfold. And the more I do that, the more harmonious these things occur.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite inspiring, really, when, you know, I'm just looking at your bio here that I read earlier in the show, and, you know, 18 albums and 16 books, you know, that's prolific in one's lifetime. And to then have these visions, these huge visions, I mean, you've had these huge visions of doing, you know, global meditations with millions of people. You're such a visionary, James. You're such a visionary and able to have these wonderful ideas show up to you. I'm sure they just pop in and you make them happen.
Yeah, thank you. I don't know what to say because to me it's rather ordinary.
Right.
And And I think it should be that way. Hopefully it will stay that way, because if I start to believe my own PR, that's probably where I'll get in trouble.
Yes, it's staying humble. But it's, you know, it's, you obviously have a great creative energy about you. You're open to this creative impulse, and you bring it forth. You've got the skills and how life rearranges itself to make all of this happen. I'm sure you have lots of stories of the people you meet and connections and how one thing leads to the next that brings these visions into manifestation, which
Oddly enough, I just had a conversation about an hour ago with someone I hadn't talked to and or even thought much about in 15 years, and this was someone who joined me in one of these rather unusual journeys what happened was I brought a group of people, I guess it was about 15 years ago. It was 1 year after the invasion of Iraq, and I just had this inspiration of bringing a group of spiritual leaders from around the world to Baghdad and to do ceremonies of peace there from each of the different traditions, and maybe one day to have a good story come out of Iraq. And next thing you knew, we were flying there, and we had shamans from North America, from Russia. We had Christian and Muslim and Jewish leaders, and we converged first in Amman, Jordan, and then took a 12-hour taxi drive through the desert to get to Baghdad, and had a great adventure. And just an hour ago, I was speaking with the woman who accompanied this shaman from Russia. And it's moments like that that I look back and remember these things that seemed just like you're just saying yes, you're just doing what you're got guided to do in the moment. But then 15 years later, you look back and say, yeah, that was pretty cool. I forgot all about that experience, and it was pretty amazing.
It was very cool. And, you know, the fact that you had this this vision and then drew amazing people to that vision.
Mm-hmm.
What I'd like to ask you is kind of as we get to the end of this conversation, what's your vision of the future? What inspires you? How can we be inspired in our lives? There's so much fear going on right now. There's so much negativity. What is it that you have found that you really want to convey to all of us listening that will uplift and allow us to have a vision and a light that we can travel with in our lives?
Well, first of all, I'm sure a lot of us are feeling paralyzed right now, just really worried about what is going on in the U.S. and around the world. Things are more polarized than ever before, and it's easy to become discouraged. But I also believe that this is a time to mobilize the good that we feel within each other and to dedicate ourselves to that good. And we don't have to even know how to do that, but we just have to be willing to be, as so often as the prayer of St. Francis, to be instruments of peace and to be played like an instrument, and to offer ourselves to the world to make a difference in small ways. It doesn't have to be like going to war zones like I do. It could just be the way that we treat one another. And so I think that this is a time of great opportunity. And I also believe that many of these shadowy things that are happening in the world are happening because, well, it's always darkest before the dawn, as they say. And I think that we like all of these things are coming to the surface to be healed. And we are the agents of that healing. And if people like you and me and everyone who's listening dedicate ourselves, just as St. Francis did 800 years ago, to being the change that can do that together, then I think we're going to realize what Vladimir Lenin was calling forth which was to have a small group of people who were so dedicated to this that the world changes on its own.
And what do you say to people as far as what they can do to dedicate themselves to a new vision, to bringing a new frequency of peace in?
That's a big question. And I think it begins with just very individual personal choices. How am I either promoting peace or promoting fear? How am I participating in the fear machine? Or how am I opening up my heart so that I can love even when it's difficult to love? And that means even loving the people who we disagree with or the people that we think are the ones who are making the world a much more challenging place. Sometimes I turn on the news just so I can use it as practice, so I can learn how to be neutral and loving even when I'm watching such ridiculous things happening in the world. So I think it starts with us making simple choices, and then when we are able to join with others, find people that we can relate to that are also focusing in positive ways. And the more of us that join together, the more groups that start to come together, the more this momentum builds, and then it won't be denied. And I think I see that happening. And maybe it's happening because of all of these dramatic situations. I don't know, but I know it's the only thing that makes me happy, so I'm just going to stick with it and share it as much as I can.
Well, I'm sure it is happening. I was watching a little video put out by the HeartMath people, which I'm sure you know about.
Mm-hmm,
and
sure.
They were talking about this coherence, the state of consciousness that they call coherence, which is the frequency of the planet. And the more you can stay in coherence, they actually demonstrated, they showed the proof that one day with a group of people somewhere in Europe just focusing on this coherent state where you're in, you know, really aligned with your heart, how it actually altered the magnetic field of the planet.
Yeah.
And that was such a powerful thing to realize, that as we get into coherence, so whatever it takes for us to get into a place where we are in our heart, when we are centered, we're in that place of unconditional love and forgiveness and gratitude, we are actually putting out a field that literally can change the energy of this planet and the field of the planet and of course everything that lives within it. That to me is what we have to remember, right? That we have that power.
Agreed. We do indeed, and the world that we see, whether it be our individual lives or the whole world, is a result of our thoughts about all of those things. And as we, as you say, come into coherence, more positive and higher vibration, the more things are going to shift on their own. And I think we're seeing the beginning of that now.
And that really is our job, so to speak, at this point in time, is to build that connection, to stay in our heart more. However we do that, with meditation, with music, with dance, with whatever path we're on, that really is contributing in a more profound way that we can generally understand. But that's our path right now. That's what we need to stay committed to. And there are a lot of people doing that. So there, you know, there is something, you know, energetically shifting. But if you focus on what is the chaos in the world, you'll think that's the only thing that is existing. But it actually is not the only thing that's going on right now, right?
Yes, exactly. I totally agree.
So in the last couple of moments we have, is there anything that you would like to share that we didn't get to touch on?
Well, I think we touched on a lot, which was great. We had a wonderful conversation, and I hope that if anyone's listening in any of those cities where we'll be sharing the musical, that they'll come out. We're also doing a big fundraiser, because even though I'm going to be traveling like St. Francis, it does cost a great deal of money just to promote this event and to have a show on Broadway. So people can get all this information. Probably the easiest would be to go to jimmytwyman@gmail.com, and they can help with the fundraising effort. They can check out the cities that and the different locations where I'll be traveling in January and February and come and see it, or join us in New York. It'd be wonderful to have people come and join us on Broadway and pass out tickets to the homeless before the show. There are going to be so many ways people can get involved. So go check out the website and let us know how you want to be there.
That would be so much fun. That would be an experience. So let me just tell people again some of the websites they can go to. You can go to St. Francis, and that's ST for Saint, stfrancismusical.com if you want to know more about the musical that James is doing on Broadway in February and March, right? February and March next
that's
year.
That's right.
And the other website
it's actually January and February, and then I think the Broadway musical ends on March 1.
Oh, okay, January, February, it ends on March. Wow, okay. And then the other website where you can learn about everything that James is doing is Jimmy Twyman, and just let me spell Twyman, which is T-W-Y-M-A-N. JimmyTwyman.com
right.
to learn more about all your adventures and projects and El Camino lights, which sounds like a lot of fun. I just might be there. Who knows? I just want to thank you so much. You're such an inspiration. Who you are, how you live your life is just an inspiration for so many of us. And I wish you the greatest success on your journeys, on your travels, on all your adventures as you continue to uplift and transform the consciousness on this planet.
Well, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure to be on the show.
It's been great having you. I've really enjoyed our conversation. So until next time, see you again, James Twyman, somewhere, maybe on Route 66, through Tulsa, Oklahoma. And to all my listeners, thank you for joining me. I hope you'll be coming back every week. And I truly hope your week is filled with love, peace, and harmony. Bye for now.